U.S. Senator Russ Feingold is our guest for the first part of this hour to talk about his efforts to restore the rule of law, to convince President-elect Obama and his administration to reverse the policies and practices of the current administration, from provisions in the Patriot Act to wiretapping, from torture to Guantanamo, from abuses of executive privilege to signing statements. How can or will President-elect Obama respond to these issues? We welcome your questions and thoughts on these issues as well for Russ Feingold, who will be with us for the next half an hour or so. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are very happy to have with us Russ Feingold, Democratic United States Senator from Wisconsin. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm great. Thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you for having me on the show and for being willing to have this topic discussed.
Well, it's an important topic, and it's a little bit confusing. What exactly is the rule of law that you're trying to restore?
Well, if I could, the first thing I want to say is I not only recognize but am deeply involved in all the other major issues that we're facing, including the car company issues, the bailout, the need to stimulate the economy, all the international issues. So I in no way want to suggest that this is something that goes ahead of these things. I'm hoping that this issue of the rule of law can be simultaneously dealt with as we deal with some of these other issues.
Mm-hmm.
I also hope that it doesn't sound, you know, extreme or pompous in any way to say we need to restore the rule of law. But I do think the rule of law in this country, meaning basically the way our Constitution is understood and has always been understood, has been attacked very seriously under the Bush administration in a way that I think is unprecedented and poses a real danger that our system of government is being eroded into a system that is so heavily tilted toward executive or presidential power that it will undo the balance that has been the way our system has worked forever. And there are many examples of this, but that's the general concern I have about where the rule of law is at this point after 8 years of the Bush administration.
Yeah, give us a few examples of especially abuses of executive power.
Well, you know, people are aware of some of the specifics, such as the Guantanamo detentions and the problems with that, the attempt to set up military tribunals that even the United States Supreme Court struck down, clearly the attitude about torture, where somehow the administration reserves the right to use torture in situations that have been clearly outlined in American law. Probably the most famous example was the president's illegal wiretapping program that I took the lead on helping to criticize and at least bring it back within the legal system. But underlying all of this is the basic point, and that is that this administration, this president, this vice president, has asserted that under Article 2 of the Constitution, under the president's powers, that the president can, as commander-in-chief, simply disregard laws that have been duly passed by Congress and signed into law by other presidents. And to me, this is an outrageous notion. That is not what the Supreme Court has said. The Supreme Court has made it very clear in Justice Jackson's famous opinion in the Steele seizure case that when Congress clearly speaks on a subject, like the warrantless wiretapping issue, that the laws have to be followed. It seems just an elemental, normal, simple thing that everybody would understand. But this administration basically says the president can do whatever he wants under the commander-in-chief power. Now, that threatens our whole system of government. I think it's wrong, I think it's dangerous, and I think it undermines the basic assumption of our system of government that the founders of our country put together when they put together the Constitution.
Well, President-elect Barack Obama is, among other things, a constitutional attorney. Do you have any doubt that he will view these issues differently than President Bush?
Well, I couldn't be more optimistic. I mean, this president-elect is the perfect person to fix this. Yes, he is a very distinguished constitutional scholar, a brilliant guy, but also a person who I know truly believes in the Constitution, and because I've worked with him on this. He has supported me on some of the critical amendments on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the Patriot Act. He was an ally, and so not only does he talk in theoretical terms on this, he has been a practical helper, and he's already announced that he will reverse some of the worst abuses, such as some of the torture things and Guantanamo, closing Guantanamo. So I'm very hopeful. Now, he may not agree with everything I want to do, but there is an enormous opportunity to repair the balance. Now, here's the problem, though. This president, any president, even Barack Obama, has the top lawyers over there, executive branch lawyers, and they are lawyers for the executive branch and for the president. Some of them might try to persuade the president that, hey, you have these powers now that were asserted by President Bush. You ought to hang on to them. It's your job to make the presidency as strong as you can. And that worries me a great deal because that is what happens over there at the White House. Now, to me, one way that Barack Obama can signal that he wants to avoid this and to get the balance right, obviously not weaken the presidency, but get it back to where it belongs, is it would be nice if he would say in the inaugural address itself, I know it's going to be a short speech, it'll be cold up there, but if he can just say a sentence or two to the effect, I renounce the extreme claims of executive power asserted by the Bush administration, that would do more for the constitutional history of this nation than any long law review article or any Supreme Court case. That would be a major moment that I think most Americans who revere and love the Constitution, as I do, would welcome. So I hope he does it. If he doesn't, I'm hoping he does it in other ways.
Yeah, you think, though, he might have second thoughts when he's handed reports like the one the other day that says the world is at risk of a, you know, some sort of WMD attack by terrorists within the next 5 years, that, you know, maybe he wants to be able to warrantless wiretap to stop something like that.
I think Barack Obama believes in the law. And that the whole idea of our system of government is that we are able to confront these challenges by following the law. The kind of changes that I want to make and that I think he believes in don't have to do with preventing us from being able to go after anybody that's trying to harm Americans. What it has to do with is not going after people about whom we have absolutely no evidence they've done anything wrong, as under the USA Patriot Act, where the permission was given basically to just take people's library records anytime they felt like it without any standard. Same thing under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, where permission is granted to take in bulk form every international communication by anyone who's done nothing wrong and to sift through it. There's already evidence that some of that's been happening, according to public reports. So these things don't get at the legitimate need to get at terrorists, and Obama already has experience in the Senate on the Foreign Relations Committee and in the Senate as a whole in realizing that a lot of these claims are very extreme and allow fishing expeditions rather than focusing on those who really intend to harm us. In fact, it's inefficient to have all of that sort of needle in a haystack situation. So, of course, he's going to look at everything in terms of protecting the American people, and he should. That's the way I look at everything. But the problem is the tendency is to say, well, okay, we've got people nervous, we've got people scared, let's grab all the power we can. And it goes too far, and it gets at the rights of completely innocent Americans.
We have our lines full with listeners who want to talk with you, so let me take our first caller, Arthur in Mazomani. Hi, Arthur, you're on the air.
Good morning. This is why we love the Ideas Network, and we greatly respect the senator. Senator, the pretext for this police state and the perpetual war was September 11th. Will the Congress investigate what happened on that day and why those buildings were pulverized to dust in 10 seconds by explosives?
Well, Arthur, I'm sorry that you wanted to ask that question instead of the one you said you wanted to ask. But he said he wanted to ask, are you concerned about then-Senator Obama's vote on FISA, the one that occurred most recently?
Yeah, that was not my happiest moment. I was disappointed, obviously. I understood the political and other elements that went into it. But it did not discourage me from believing that when he has the chance, and he will have the chance, to do the right thing here and to try to fix the mistakes in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that he will do so. And the advantage here, see, what happened with that package is that people were able to say, all right, like, look, if you delay this bill to try to make these changes to protect people who've done nothing wrong, then you're going to slow down the bill. Well, this time it's going to be his bill. It's going to be an anti-terrorism bill where he can include the fixes we need. And we'll be able to say to those who are slowing it down, hey, you're slowing down a bill to help get us get the terrorists, even though there will be protections in there to protect people who've done nothing wrong. So that gives us a huge advantage, and I know that Barack Obama thoroughly understands the benefit of that, and I believe there are already feelers going out to us and others about, you know, what changes need to be made and what can be made. Now, some things can be done simply by executive order by the president. Some things have to be done legislatively, but we're going to be presenting the president with a complete report from the hearing I held on this that outlines in essentially almost scores of changes that need to be made, and I believe that, that President-elect Obama will be eager to help us with that.
We are talking with U.S. Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin, who says the Bush administration has treated the Constitution and the rule of law with a disrespect never before seen in the history of this country, and that he wants President-elect Obama and the Obama administration to restore the rule of law. We welcome your questions about this for Senator Feingold, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, and our next caller is Adam in Phillips. Hi, Adam. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like to make two just brief points to the senator. Number one, all these supposed abuses of the Bush administration have been supported in a bipartisan nature by Congress, and we saw that recently when that bill was signed into law to make it legal what the foreign companies have been doing, which was violating the Fourth Amendment. And then specifically, I'd like to say that my family in Milwaukee was murdered by local police because of my opposition to certain politics of the group.
Yeah. I'm not on the topic, Adam. Let's talk, though, that it takes two parties to agree to these abuses of power, Senator Feingold.
That's absolutely right, and I think one of the most telling moments of the hearing we held in the rule of law last fall was when a Republican congressman testified before us and said, you know, of course, the executive has asserted this power. That's what executives do. But it's up to the Congress to stand up and use its powers, all the way from oversight hearings and investigations to denying funding, the power of the purse. That's our power to prevent these kind of abuses. And that hasn't been done. I certainly have sought to do it. As people know, I've taken the lead in the entire Congress on these kind of issues. But, you know, sadly, I've not always had support, not only from Republicans, but even Democrats. Even Democrats that ran on questioning aspects of the USA Patriot Act in 2006, when it came to the real votes, a lot of them really jumped ship. And I think that was a major disappointment for many progressives around the country, and actually not just progressives, independents, Republicans, anybody who believes that we have a system of laws here in this country that are meant to balance the need to stop those who try to harm us and the right of people who are doing nothing wrong to be left alone. So, yes, the Congress has part of the blame here. It's not just about restoring the rule of law from the point of view of the executive. It's Congress's role in it, and that's exactly why I'm working on this so hard at this point to get it ready to go.
Next, we go to Laverne in Monroe. Good morning, Laverne.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Senator.
How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, glad to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
I have two questions. What do you think of the new Attorney General? And you know there's 35,000 lobbyists in Washington, and Granny D. Haddock, I'm reading her book, you know, she walked across the United States at 90 years old.
I walked with her.
I know,
Nashville, Tennessee.
Quite an honor, wasn't it?
Yes.
Do you think we can get past all those lobbyists? That's probably a bigger problem than the Attorney General. I think he could have maybe been a little better, but I don't know.
Eric Holder, the nominee for Attorney General, Russ Feingold, what do you think of him?
Well, first of all, on the special interests, obviously, that's a huge battle, and Barack Obama and I wrote the strongest bill against lobbyist abuses in the history of the country, and we got it passed. And we need to do more, obviously. But with regard to Eric Holder, I think he's a pretty good choice. He's a relatively non-controversial. I will be asking him questions, not only about his view of what we're talking about today, what the Constitution says about presidential power and what limits there are. There will be questions raised about this Mark Rich pardon issue that was not his finest hour. I have some concerns about his role in terms of the drafting of the USA Patriot Act, but overall my encounters and experiences with him have been very good. So I go into it thinking he's a good choice, and I don't have any doubt that he would follow the president's will on this. Barack Obama will be the president. He will give very clear direction to the Attorney General because he is a president who completely understands these issues. In fact, he's one of the brightest lawyers in the country, Barack Obama, in addition to being our new president. So, and Holder's very talented as well. So they're very capable, but we will go through the process that we need to go through in the committee to examine Mr. Holder thoroughly.
Speaking of pardons and attorney generals, there's some speculation, and it's just speculation, that President Bush might pardon, though he hasn't been charged with any crimes, Alberto Gonzalez.
Well, you know, I tried to get ahead of this one, too. I started thinking about this many months ago, and I had an op-ed piece, I think, on Salon.com, that essentially said, look out. You know, those Clinton pardons were horrible. They were embarrassing. They were corrupt and a total abuse. There is a potential here that something even worse would happen here that's directly connected to this issue of the rule of law. The president has almost complete power to pardon people. It's not something you can really say is a legal violation. We're trying to put pressures to make sure that he doesn't pardon people like Gonzalez, Dick Cheney, and others, not only for things that they might already be accused of, but for anything they did. That's something that he can do within the pardon power, and I think it would be a real affront to the rule of law. I'm not interested in us spending all kinds of time, you know, accusing people of things and looking at the past, but there has to be some accountability for these gross abuses of the rule of law. And so I hope the president doesn't abuse his pardon powers. I believe Mukasey, Attorney General Mukasey, the current Attorney General, actually had an op-ed today in one of the newspapers saying, you know, that a pardon shouldn't be used in some of these cases. So I think that's a hopeful sign coming from the current Attorney General that this will not be abused, but it's something I'm watching very closely.
An email from Dave in Madison. How will those in the administration who have violated U.S. and international law find their way to prison?
Well, you know, this all depends on, first of all, that the president doesn't pardon people in advance, and then the legal system can work its course. It may require, in some cases, results of investigations by Congress. In other cases, there may already be reasons for prosecutors to look at these situations. I'm not going to sit here today and allege direct crimes in specific situations, but I think it's something that has to be reviewed, because I do think some clearly illegal conduct occurred here.
Jake in Menasha is with us now. Hi, Jake. You're on the air.
Good morning to both of you. My question is, actually, you were talking about it earlier when your opening comments, Senator, when you were talking about the claims of the executive powers and the violations of law by President Bush and Vice President Cheney. And you're asking for the repudiation of those claims by President-elect Obama. My question is, what can be done after the fact? All of these things have been done, whether Obama repudiates them or not is problematic. The horses are out of the barn. You can close the barn door now, but the horses are still running around out in the field.
Well, that's why this has to include a number of elements. First of all, we were just talking about the potential legal liability in a court of law, either criminal or civil, for some of these things. Secondly, clear investigatory actions in the Congress to make sure the record is clear about what happened and then anything that flows from that. But the fact is that even if these abuses have occurred, the most important thing right now is to have this president, this administration, and this Congress say, those were aberrations, those were wrong, we reject them, because what does matter is the constitutional history. What is the understanding of our system of government? Is this Bush period going to be portrayed as the beginning of the great new executive? Or is it going to be portrayed as a lawless exception to our traditions and our country? That is critical, even though, as you say, in some cases, there's no doubt the horse is out of the barn. If we don't make a clear statement in every way we can, both legislatively and through the executive branch, that the rule of law has to be restored, we will have changed our system of government. And frankly, that is even more important than the specific violations that have occurred here, which are very serious. So it is very important to reestablish our Constitution.
Jake didn't say what I thought he was also going to say is, do you think that something should be done or can something be done about impeaching the president and vice president after the fact?
You know, I don't think impeachment is the way to go at this point. I think I have in the past introduced a resolution to censure the president, the vice president, also Gonzalez, on a number of matters. I think that would be a good thing. The truth is I don't think there's going to be a lot of enthusiasm for that. I think the more important thing is to have the investigations and make it very clear that we follow any evidence of legal wrongdoing. And things that are not technically illegal, we need to pass new laws to make it absolutely clear that some of this conduct cannot occur. And then we need a president, this president, to say, all right, these laws are the law of the land, and they will be respected. I will not use a signing statement or some other abuse to say, oh, by the way, I'm not going to follow this because I don't have to. So all of these things need to happen. I think that's better than impeachment.
Andre in Milwaukee emails, can there be more control put upon executive orders? That's
absolutely
it.
And I believe that the president will show us by reversing a number of executive orders of the Bush administration that he will pare this back. He may use executive orders for proper purposes, but for example, I expect he'll use executive order to close down Guantanamo. I expect he'll use an executive order to change the rules regarding the torture back to the Army Field Manual and the law and the Geneva Convention. I think he'll use an executive order to reverse something that happened under the Bush administration that was a reversal of the Clinton administration. That is that there was a presumption against classifying documents. In other words, things should be open unless there's reason not to have them be open. The Bush administration turned that around. The president can undo that executive order on his own, and I will be urging him to do that as a part of our package on the rule of law.
Mm-hmm. Can Congress do anything to help restore the rule of law? Does it just have to be up to Barack Obama?
No, not at all. And I've been trying to say clearly in this interview that it is the role of Congress as well as the role of the executive. The president can only do certain things on his own, things that are subject to an executive order, the kinds of things I was just talking about. But the Congress can do a number of things. The Congress can have investigations and accountability and oversight, and whenever any of these people come up for confirmation, such as Holder, say, look, do you understand that under Article 2 of the Constitution there are limits to the president's power, so we can use the appointment process. But in the end, we have two other great powers, the fundamental powers. One is to deny funding to programs in the executive branch until they come around to the rule of law. This is what the Republican congressman at our hearing urged us to do. We need to use that power. And then, of course, fundamentally, we have the power to pass laws. We need to pass in the House and the Senate the changes to the USA Patriot Act and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act that I have sought for many, many years and that were defeated on the floor. Sometimes we won them in Judiciary Committee, but were defeated on the floor. We need to pass laws, send it to the president, and hope that he'll sign them. And if we don't, he can't do that on his own. We are the only ones who can, of course, change the statute.
Next, we go to Carl in Madison. Hi, Carl.
Howdy. Senator Feingold, do you see a role for a special prosecutor being appointed in the situations where the involving the politicization of the Justice Department and
the firing of the U.S. attorneys?
And Don Siegelman, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the prosecution of Don Siegelman?
Potentially, yes, if it's necessary. I suspect that the new attorney general will be eager and willing to pursue these matters and should. First choice is to have it done if we believe the new attorney general is capable of doing it. But if that doesn't work, we could always look at a special prosecutor. These things do need to be pursued.
We will go now to Steele in Nina. Hi, Steele. You're on the air.
Yeah. Good morning to hear the both of you. Yeah, I was listening to John Roberts' confirmation hearings, and they were talking just about policies and the like. And an interesting comment he made, you know, if the Congress doesn't like the laws that are made, then it's, you know, they have the power to change it. And I was wondering how often the Congress and the like use the Supreme Court as a scapegoat so they don't really have to deal with the main issue and maybe lose constituents in their vote.
Well, I think that does happen. And I think that the Chief Justice, or at the time Judge Roberts, was right that on a number of issues, the Congress needs to step up to the plate as on the Patriot Act and the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act and pass the law. On the other hand, Judge Roberts at the time told me that he would respect the idea that when Congress has acted, clearly that the executive branch will adhere to that, will obey it. And I do not feel at this point, I am disappointed that he has not, even though I voted for him, that he has not, in a number of critical decisions, voted the way I would have expected based on what he said to me about the rule of law. So I have been somewhat disappointed, and I'm hoping that he'll turn this around, because he was very clear that if Congress has clearly spoken, that the flexibility of the executive branch is very narrow. So this is going to be an important test of his attitude on this.
We have 5 more minutes with U.S. Senator Russ Feingold talking with us about his efforts to restore the rule of law.
to convince President-elect Obama and his administration and Congress to reverse the policies and practices like wiretapping, torture, Guantanamo, abuses of executive privilege to signing statements. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org if you'd like to talk with Senator Feingold about these issues and his efforts. An email from Michael in Madison. Senator, what support do you have in the House of Representatives to restore the rule of law?
I would say on balance it's even better than in the Senate. We have really good support from people on Judiciary Committee, people led by John Conyers, Jerry Nadler, many people in the House who are terrific on this. People always remember that I was the only senator to vote against the USA Patriot Act, but there were something like 66 members of the House that had the guts to stand up to that. So we have a lot of good people in the House, and I think even more now, who will help us. This will not be a completely lonely battle by any means, and I really do look forward to coalescing with my House colleagues on these matters.
Yeah, you mentioned at the beginning of the hour, you certainly know there are many other issues, pressing issues and challenges before this country, and you're following all those. But you really do think this is important, and this needs to be a priority. Why is it so important?
Well, you know, our whole country is based on the idea of a system of checks and balances, of a system of a constitutional law, and a faith and a belief that following the rule of law and following the law, even at times of war, is the way to go, is the way to have a good society and to be successful in the world. That's my faith. That's why I went into politics, and that's why when I swear an oath to the Constitution, I mean it. And the good news here is these things can be done relatively easily. I mean, compared to trying to deal with this financial crisis and the General Motors problem and the issues having to do with the incredibly complex issues of international terrorism and energy, health care, this is relatively straightforward. It requires a political will and a faith in our system of government. And we can do this, as Hillary Clinton said to me the other day when we were talking on the phone. She called me about her appointment. I congratulated her, and she talked about foreign policy. She says we need to learn to walk and chew gum at the same time. Well, that applies to this. This is an opportunity to walk on those issues. But we can chew gum on fixing this rule of law very easily. We can fix this if we have the will to do it.
Yeah, Rick in West Bend. Hi, Rick. You're on the air.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I would like to ask if the senator believes there should be any action taken to reestablish the separation of the three branches. There seems to be an awful lot of pressure being exerted between them that eliminates that separation.
Well, that's exactly what this whole rule of law point is if the executive branch can argue that under Article 2 of the Constitution, they don't have to respect the acts of Congress, they turn the Congress into a peanut gallery. Now, some people may think that's what it is anyway, but the truth is we do have certain powers and the ability, if we're respected and our powers are respected, to prevent abuses by the executive branch. This is what our revolution was all about. We didn't want a king. We didn't want King George. And so we have to take the steps I've been talking about today in order to make sure those separations between the judicial and the executive and the executive and the legislative branch are maintained.
So how optimistic are you, Senator Feingold, that the rule of law will be restored?
I'm very optimistic. I can't imagine a better person than President-elect Obama to get this done. He will explain it calmly. He will explain it in the context of guaranteeing that the American people are protected militarily and in terms of terrorist threats and all those issues, but that there is no need to undo the basic system of government that we have. So I am very optimistic. I think it'll be one of the easier things to do rather than one of the harder things to do. And I hope by this time next year I still feel that way about it and that a lot of it's been accomplished.
Yeah. So are you headed off to take care of one of those harder things to do?
I am.
We'll let you go. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much.
Russ Feingold, Democratic United States Senator from Wisconsin. We will talk with a professor of government about these issues for the rest of the hour and welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. How important is this to our country to reverse these issues or restore the rule of law, as Russ Feingold puts it? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up, Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. Kathleen and her guest will examine how the Obama transition team is working with the Bush White House for a smooth presidential changeover. That's coming up after 9 o'clock. We have been talking about the rule of law in this country, and the abuses our last guest said the Bush administration has had when it comes to the rule of law, everything from torture to warrantless wiretapping to the Patriot Act and much more. Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin says the Bush administration has put a shameful legacy on this country for years to come, and he's very hopeful that the new administration and President-elect Barack Obama will restore the rule of law. We wonder if you think this is important, what questions you have about restoring the rule of law. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We get the reaction and analysis now from Barbara Perry, professor of government at Sweetbriar College in Virginia and director of the Center of Civic Renewal. She studies the Constitution, governance, and the rule of law, and she joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Well, you know, Senator Feingold of Wisconsin says this is very important to not only to him but to the country, and he's hopeful that we will see that these policies and practices will be reversed under President-elect Obama. Do you share that optimism?
I do. I think that now President-elect Obama, as was pointed out earlier, is a student of the Constitution. I think he's going to come into office with a different view of the Constitution, I think, as compared to the current incumbent and the vice president. And I think that he will at least start down the road that Senator Feingold suggested, and that is, if not to make a bold statement in the inaugural address, at least to begin to reverse some of these policies of the current administration. And I think we'll probably speak eloquently to the necessity for holding to the rule of law.
Yeah. First, he's already, Obama has already indicated that he's going to shut Guantanamo and other things, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. So I think he's already begun to move down that path, and I think he will continue to do so. Now, we should say that we have to have a caveat here, and that is that things may look different to the president once he is ensconced in the Oval Office at the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue from Capitol Hill and from the views that he held as a member of Congress and as a candidate. Someone wrote in the Post yesterday, in the Washington Post, in an editorial, the closer one gets to the Oval Office, the wiser your predecessors appear. And it might be similar to children growing into adults. People always say that once they become a parent, they suddenly realize how wise their own parents were after perhaps criticizing them. So no doubt there will be some decisions that might be disappointing to Senator Feingold and to the rest of us who believe in the rule of law, because we also have to remember that the president is responsible for our safety, for our individual safety, and for our national security. And so the president is going to have to create a balancing act between individual rights and national security. But every president has had to do that. It just becomes more difficult when we are involved in a war, especially one as difficult as the war on terror.
Yeah, and then an example that I did bring up with Senator Feingold is that we just had that report issued, too, saying that there will be a major terrorist attack using some sort of WMD, weapon of mass destruction, within the next 5 years in some major city. And so when you're hearing about these threats, some of these powers that the Bush administration put into the executive branch start looking a little better.
It's certainly worrisome, the thought of a nuclear attack of some sort on our soil unleashed by terrorists. But I would point out the case of Jose Padilla. Listeners might be familiar with that case, that was one of the very first that that the Bush administration, the executive branch, took action on. We might recall that this man was an American citizen. He was rounded up at O'Hare Airport and was thought to be plotting to build a dirty bomb and to unleash it in America. And he was thrown in the brig, in the Navy brig, in the Fourth Judicial Circuit in, I believe it was in South Carolina. And eventually his case went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Bush administration said that this man, this is after 9/11, had no right of access even to an attorney or certainly to a civilian court. And the U.S. Supreme Court disagreed in those instances. And eventually he was brought to trial in Florida, and he was convicted. So we can say in that instance the rule of law did apply, but that an individual had to go through the court system, in effect, to overturn a decision by the executive branch. So it shows that we can be vigilant in the war on terror, and we can put those in jail who would do us ill, including up to using weapons of mass destruction. So it did work, and we should remember that, I think, as a touchstone.
Let's take some calls. Nancy in Phelps is with us. Hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. I have a question regarding the signing statements. I'm really not clear about how that started or when it started, but would you explain to me how that works and also why the president can disregard the laws or the bills that are enacted by the Congress and sign on to it and then later say he's not going to abide by it. Maybe I misunderstand the whole thing, but would you please explain that to me?
Yeah, that is kind of confusing. I'm signing this into law, except if I don't want to follow it.
Yes, I think Nancy expresses a very valid perplexity at this because I have to admit to it myself. I think that she's absolutely right, that it's not up to the president to engage in for years was almost called a line item veto, and that there were some who wanted the president to have that power, some in Congress, for budgetary reasons, on budget bills, that the president would be able to go through line by line, as most state governors are allowed to do, and say, no, I'm not going to fund this, no, I'm not going to fund this, but then say, yeah, but the rest of this can pass through. So in my view, this concept of the signing statement was similar to that. And we should note that when Congress attempted to give the president the line item veto power in budget bills, the Supreme Court overturned it and said, in order to change the power of the president in such a fundamental way to give him line item veto power, that would have to come through a constitutional amendment. So I think Nancy is exactly right that there's nowhere in the Constitution that gives the president the power to engage in signing statements. He can engage in any kind of symbolic statement he wishes as he signs something into law, but to think that he could say, I will follow this part of the bill but not this part of the bill that I'm signing, I've always thought was ludicrous.
Our next caller is Robert in Eau Claire. Hi, Robert.
Hello. Hey, well, I don't know that I'd ever equate the Bush, or no matter how long Obama's in as a president, I don't think he'll equate wisdom with that guy. But, hey, that's the way the world works. These people, my problem is that I'm not finding anything that's coming back to resolving any problems in the normal legal system that would be resolved by through FISA or through any of the court actions that were supposed to take place for a reasonable search. So there's nothing. These senators all voted for this kind of thing. They were obviously asleep at the switch in other areas, or we wouldn't have the other national security risk we have with our economic problems. And they were all voting to basically have your rights to have these warrantless searches. And there's nothing going to change about that in the future because some new guy comes in with the same old people, by the way. You got Condoleezza Rice in there to help cover up the falling towers and the evidence we have.
Yeah, all right, Robert. She's on her way out too, right?
Yes.
What about, though, that the question that this, you know, Congress voted for some of these things, like the reauthorization of that FISA and the immunity to phone companies? That the Congress is going along with these things.
Yes, that is problematic, and Senator Feingold is going to have his hands full in his own branch of government in trying to convince his colleagues otherwise. But I think what Senator Feingold is saying is that with a new leader who can propose bills in his own language and put those before Congress and not take the attitude that the Bush administration had, which was to set up the policy in such a way that they could criticize members of Congress and say, if you don't go along with us, you're soft on terrorism. You're soft on the war on terrorism. The sort of thing that happened to Max Cleland in Georgia when he lost, by the way, to Saxby Chambliss 6 years ago, to accuse this terribly wounded Vietnam veteran of being soft on security. But that was sort of the Karl Rove approach to politics, as we all recall. And I think that is what will change in the White House. It will be a sea change, I believe. Not that it won't be political, and not that there won't be political hardball being played by the White House, but I think vis-a-vis the Congress, there could be that sort of change, and that might help to bring about some of the reform that Senator Feingold is searching for.
Nelson and Madison emails, if the Congress fails to hold the Bush administration accountable for its many blatant abuses of executive power, what will stop some future tyrant from repeating these behaviors?
A very good question from Nelson about that. It was clear to me in listening to Senator Feingold that he would not be willing to go down the impeachment road that, of course, is an extreme, but that he does want accountability. Should that have to come through the courts, he would want to see that. And I think that the check, we have to remember that when we talk about the rule of law, one of the basic principles, two basic principles of our Constitution, separation of powers and checks and balances, it's very much related to the previous question. It is up to Congress to hold, as well as the courts, to hold the president in check, to hold the executive branch in check. So we're hoping that now President-elect Obama will want to take a different path. If he doesn't, or to overturn some of these actions of the Bush administration, it will be up to Congress to try to move in that direction. And if cases come to the courts, to try to restore that rule of law that we're searching for.
Ron in La Crosse is with us now. Hi, Ron.
Yes, her comment couldn't have been more timely, because that's exactly what I think Congress was derelict in its constitutional duties, not issuing charges of impeachment against King George and Dick Cheney, who was always an unabashed advocate for an imperial presidency. I mean, the conservative pundits like to point out, you know, when other the news media likes to say how unpopular Bush is in the polls. The conservative pundits say, yeah, well, Congress is even less popular, and they were saying this just after the 06 midterm elections. The reason Congress was even less popular, they didn't have the wherewithal and the backbone to rise to the occasion and discharge their constitutional duties and discharge those two, get rid of those two, because obviously Bush wasn't even really elected by the popular vote 8 years ago, for crying out loud.
Professor Perry?
Yes, I think we should also remember that President Obama, once in office, will have much more sizable majorities in the House and in the Senate. He won't reach the magic number of 60 to have a filibuster-proof Senate, but he will have much larger majorities to work with from his own party. And so I think some of the hopes that Ron has about Congress standing up to the president should he not go in the direction it wishes. Let's just say its backbone has been strengthened by the electorate in this last election and starting in 2006. And we should remember that it was a Republican Senate with whom President Bush was working. And so some of these abilities for Congress to stand up to the president in terms of partisan politics, that just was not there. It will be this time if Congress will only have the backbone to use its power and to check the executive if need be and to reverse some of the current policies.
Scott in Spooner, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. First, let me start by saying I am definitely no fan of President Bush. He overspent. In addition to that, overspending that he and the Democrat Congress allowed to happen, and the fact that he and the Democrat Congress didn't do anything about the illegal alien problem,
yeah.
I think we have to give the man credit for something. If we could go back in time and place ourselves in our old position, wherever we were on September 12, 2001, if anyone had said to us, if the president can go for the next 7 years and make sure that there are no more terrorist attacks on U.S. soil, would you think he was doing a good job? I think everybody in this country, Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever, would all agree he had done a good job.
Yeah, do we need to be giving President Bush more credit for that not having a terrorist attack on in this country since 9/11?
Right. Well, remember when I mentioned that balancing act that's inevitable in civil rights and liberties versus security? That is what we've been engaged in for the last 7 years. And we will say about President Bush that he didn't write the balance, that he placed more emphasis on the national security. And I do believe Scott is right, that we have to say on 9/11, that's what we were all thinking. I didn't hear of any people on 9/12 talk about the rule of law. That doesn't mean that they weren't interested in it or that they believed that the balance should be more in balance than perhaps President Bush. So we do, I think, have to give him some credit for that. The only problem is it's a little hard to prove a negative. In other words, we can't say directly that all of the things that President Bush did, in some instances in violating the rule of law, definitely led to us not having another terror attack. But we do have to give him some credit. I do believe Scott is right on that, and we should be thankful that we have not had that. But that doesn't mean now, in retrospect, that we can't go back and say, we need to rethink this balance a little bit more, and we need to perhaps shift back to the concepts of individual rights and rule of law. And we get to do this after every war.
We have just a minute to go here. Professor Perry, just a brief thought on the pardons that President Bush is able to do between now and leaving office and the likelihood, perhaps, that he might be pardoning people like Alberto Gonzalez?
I would say, based on his own precedents, he has used pardon power sparingly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking that he's thinking about his legacy, as all presidents do at this time. And we know just from his statements this week about some mistakes that he's made, I think he would know that would unleash such venom towards him and take him out on the worst possible road that might cause him to hold back.
Well, we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Joy.
Barbara Perry, professor of government at Sweet-Briar College in Virginia and director of the Center of Civic Renewal. Thanks very much to Cynthia Schuster for producing this hour. Thanks to Cynthia and Rob Ferret for on-air production and direction. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.